for everybody and everything. All he's concerned about is his political position. And Nebuchadnezzar is getting ready to conquer these people. And he's scared death about that. Jeremiah has told Zedekiah several times, if you go out and humble yourself, you'll get to live your life out in Babylon, which beats the alternative. In his case, he did not do that, and he got caught, and then he killed his two boys in front of his eye, right in front of him, and then they poked his eyes out. Okay, Jeremiah 37. Jeremiah has been getting ready to get thrown in jail again. Everybody hates Jeremiah, and the bureaucrats and the town friar is trying to kill him or trying to get rid of him. Jeremiah 37, verse 11. And it came to pass that when the army of the Chaldeans was broken up from Jerusalem for the fear of Pharaoh's army, then Jeremiah went forth out of Jerusalem to go into the land of Benjamin to separate himself thence in the midst of the people. And when he was yet in the gate of Benjamin, a captain of the ward, or warden, was there, whose name was Irijah, the son of Shelemiah, the son of Hananiah, and he took Jeremiah the prophet, saying, thou fallest away to the Chaldeans. Okay, so he's accusing Jeremiah, you're trying to escape, you're trying to run away, you're trying to get out of here. Jeremiah said, it is false. I fall not away to the Chaldeans. But he hearkened not to him, so Irijah took Jeremiah and brought him to the princes. Now here we go, a typical communist informing somebody, has no proof of anything, and he's taken Jeremiah, captain of the ward. This is a typical bureaucrat. They say it's the law. You ask them what law they're referring to, they can't tell you. They might refer you to code, that's not the law. And you ask the bureaucrats, three different bureaucrats in the same department, you get probably three different answers. So most of them, they just operate on what they think is the law. And most times they get away with it, and that's what this guy's doing. Okay, verse 15, wherefore the princes were wroth with Jeremiah, they were mad at him, and smote him. So here you go, you got him beating him up. Put him in prison in the house of Jonathan the scribe, for they had made that the prison. No lawful charges, just thrown him in a pokey. Still goes on today. Okay, and what they'll do is they'll intimidate, until they get the person to accept a plea bargain. Oh, you're going to get 30 years. You're going to get 30 years. You wait while you're in the pokey about 3 months, and then you say, oh, well, we could probably cut it down to 20 years, and then you wait another 3 months. Oh, it's probably, well, we can probably cut your deal for 10 years. And if you just stand and fight the thing, you know, if you bail yourself out, you probably get off got free. The courts, their purpose is not justice. Their purpose is convictions. That's the purpose. Convictions. That's their goal. They'll intimidate. They'll pressure. A lawyer will throw a two-year-old temper tantrum. The judge will throw a two-year-old temper tantrum. And they know that those techniques work in intimidation. They'll appeal to the person's mother or their sister. Emotions, trying to get them to sign this plea agreement, and most give in to it. And if you go into court and listen very closely, you'll hear a judge say, do you realize you're waiving your right? You're waiving your right. And they'll say it, and these guys say, I understand. The judge could say, do you realize we're going to take a knife and we're going to cut your throat very slowly? I understand. Yeah, just sign this agreement and you will cut your throat. And they'll do it. Most of them do that. Okay, so this is any nation that starts to the end of that nation, that's what happens. Of course, the master of the deception in the Justice Department, if you call it that, will be the Antichrist. That's going to be his best technique. Okay, so verse 15, they beat him up. There's a young man down in the Indianapolis area, was in court, didn't have a driver's license, never had a driver's license, didn't have a social security number, never had a social security number. And in court, the deputy started beating him up. Rather embarrassing. So then they take him into another room, and then you can hear him beating him up in there. And he had no lawful right of any of it, none of it, zero, zilch, nada. If the young man knows the law well enough, he can take them to the cleaners. Okay, as soon as anybody lays a hand on you, you just look at him and say, if he assaults me one more time, you know the law. That's assault, laying and touching you. Okay, so verse 16, when Jeremiah was entered into the dungeon, so he's deep down in there, and into the cabins, and Jeremiah had remained there many days. Now, it doesn't say how long. Long time. It's a drag. So he's down there in a dungeon, and here comes Zedekiah the king. What's the king going down in a dungeon for? Well, he's not going down there, but he is sending Jeremiah. Then Zedekiah the king sent and took him out, and the king asked him secretly in his house and said, is there any word from the Lord? Jeremiah is probably thinking, why, of course. But you haven't listened before. Why should I tell you anything else? And just think of it. Think of the temptation Jeremiah had at this point of saying, yes, king, there's a word from the Lord. God loves you. Smile. Have a good day. You know, so he can get out of jail. He said, yeah, there's something from the Lord. Look what he says. Jeremiah said, oh, there is, for, said he, thou shalt be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon. He says, king, you're a dead duck, man. Boy, he didn't back off from anything. You can see why these people hated Jeremiah. And I bet you Zedekiah shook his head and said, Jeremiah, you're just a radical. You're a fanatic. You're a nut. You're a fruitcake, man. There's something wrong with you. And he probably said, something wrong with you. You won't listen to God. I listen to God. You won't listen to God. You're crazy. I'm not crazy. You see, people think Christians crazy, Bible believers crazy. The world thinks we're nuts. They're the one that's nuts. They're one heartbeat from hell. As soon as their heart stops, they're in hell. I'm one heartbeat from heaven. Now tell me, who's crazy, them or me? See? Okay, so Zedekiah, he got another negative response. Verse 18. Moreover, Jeremiah said unto King Zedekiah, what have I offended against thee, or against thy servants, or against this people, that ye have put me in prison? What's the charges? Where are now your prophets, which prophesied unto you, saying, the king of Babylon shall not come against you, nor against this land? See, he had, like Bill Clinton, he had Billy Graham come in and counseled him during his very trying times. And Jesse Jackson came in too. Oh, just wonderful, great harmony, love. Can you imagine the counseling things? Can you imagine Elijah counseling Slick Willie? Coming in here? Hey, fella, you've got a hen-pecked wife, you know that? And just laying it right on the guy. You know, Bill Clinton, he believed that verse in Proverbs where it says, it's better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than in a wide house with a brawling woman. He understood that verse. Totally. Well, Jeremiah is really putting it on him. He's making fun of his religious leaders. Where's your prophets now, king? You know the ones that told you the real positive things? He said, I'm the one that's so negative. Where's your positive prophets now? Verse 19, where are now your prophets which prophesied unto you, saying, the king of Babylon shall not come against you, nor against this land? Therefore, hear now, I pray thee, O my Lord the king. Let my supplication, I pray thee, be accepted before thee, that thou cause me not to return to the house of Jonathan the scribe, lest I die there. the scribe wanted to kill him. That's what he wanted to do. Now, that's typical. People that cut you with their words by slander and criticism desire to cut you with a knife. If they had the guts, they'd do it. But cutting you with words, their real motive is to cut you with a knife, shoot you with a gun. That's what their desire is. Envy, jealousy. The end result of envy is murder. Okay, so notice how he's talking here, verse 20. He is talking polite. He is respectful. Oh, my Lord, the King. He does make his request, but he doesn't compromise. He doesn't compromise anything. So a person can be respectful and stand his ground. But he knows that the scribe, Jonathan, wants to kill him. He wants to kill him. He's probably not giving him food, probably not giving him water at times, trying to draw the thing out. Verse 21, then Zedekiah the king commanded that they should commit Jeremiah into the court of the prison, that they should give him daily a piece of bread out of the baker's street, until all the bread in the city were spent. Thus Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. So, bread and water, which is probably better than what he was doing when he was in the dungeon. Okay, Jeremiah 38. Okay, then, look at all them names. Then them fellers there. Jeremiah spoke unto all the people, saying, thus saith the Lord. Verse 2, he that remaineth in this city shall die by the sword, by the famine, by the pestilence. But he that goeth forth to the Chaldeans shall live, for he shall have his life for a prey and shall live. Okay, the idea is you stoop to conquer, humble yourself, go out there, humble yourself to the Chaldeans, and they'll take you prisoner. Now, the best war is a war that's conducted where nobody dies. You just put the thing out there, threaten them, and everybody just cowers down and say, okay, you got us. That's the best general you can have. That's the best kind of war. Okay, when you got to kill a bunch of people, well, now you got to, you know, get over the sadness and everything, and people have got a distrust of you and everything. So the best way to do it is just show your forces, come in, don't kill anybody, just conquer, and that's it. That's what Babylon's doing. That's what Babylon's doing. So if the people go out voluntarily, humble themselves to the Chaldeans, verse 2, Jeremiah is telling them, God is telling them, that if you do that, you'll live. You'll live. Verse 3, thus says the Lord, this city shall surely be given into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which shall take it. Therefore, the princes said unto the king, okay, here's your bureaucrats, we beseech thee, let this man be put to death. They want to kill him just for words. The death penalty, just for saying words, for quoting Bible words from God, and they say, this man's crazy, kill him. We beseech thee, let this man be put to death, for thus he weakeneth the hands of the men of the war that remain in the city, and the hands of all the people, and is speaking such words unto them, for this man seeketh not the welfare of this people, but the hurt. Oh, okay. You got to watch out for politicians that are concerned for your welfare. Never trust a guy who is concerned for the poor when he gets a six-figure income. Something don't work there. Jesse Jackson, one of the biggest leeches, blood-sucking leeches in our country. Dean? Yep. Right. Same thinking. They said he's not seeking the welfare of this people. Well, the welfare is verse 2. He said, if you stay in town, you're dead. Go out there. That's seeking the welfare of people. Karl Marx claimed before the working class. The guy had 2 children die from starvation because he wouldn't work. He was a journalist. Claimed that, who was I? I was listening to some liberal Democrat talking about, you know, he's been fighting for the working class. The guy's probably never had a dirty finger in his life as far as, you know, getting grease or dirt or anything like that. Probably his greatest sorrow is paper cuts through the day. Yeah, watch out for a politician to claim to care for the welfare of the people. The people. That's a very interesting phrase. You find that in the Bible. The people. We had some guy back in the 1800s who said, we have a government for the people, by the people, and all this stuff. And that rascal passed the first income tax, the first executive order. He took the land from the people. He declared martial law without one vote or one consideration from the people. He jailed a 9-year-old boy for passing a newspaper that had a negative article towards him. He arrested a statesman from Ohio, threw him in jail for about a year. He had a war going in New York for the draft. He instituted the draft without the people's vote. He had a war starting in Indiana, Illinois, Ohio was thinking about seceding from the Union when it got into this thing. He had about 3 skirmishes going on at the same time, and he cared for the people. He didn't care for the people. You got to be careful about people, politicians that talk about the people. Look, if you would, in Amos chapter 7. Amos chapter 7. The people. They're always talking about the people. There are certain catchwords that politicians will use to manipulate minds of people that are easily deceived. We had a guy down in Jasper County that was a liberal. Jasper County, we have a newspaper called Rensselaer Republican. Conservative people are supposed to be. And they reelected a guy named Jim Johns. Probably 3 or 4 times. Jim Johns' voting record was worse than Ted Kennedy's. And here you have these conservative farmers keep reelecting this guy. And when he would get in a parade, he wouldn't ride in a convertible with the signs. He'd ride a junk bicycle back and forth. That's smooth. Like he was caring for the common man. Got him in office 3 or 4 times. And he was cutting the throats of the common man through the whole process. See, politics, it's the art of deception. Amos chapter 7, here's Amos. I like old Amos. He's one of my favorite characters in the Bible. Amos was a herdman. He was a gatherer of sycamore fruit, had an orchard. Amos 7:10, then Amaziah the priest of Bethel sent Jeroboam, king of Israel, saying, Amos hath conspired against thee in the midst of the house of Israel. The land is not able to bear all his words. For thus Amos saith, Jeroboam shall die by the sword, and Israel shall surely be led away captive out of their own land. And Amaziah said unto Amos, O thou seer, go flee thee away into the land, and there eat bread and prophesy there. But prophesy not again any more at Bethel, for it is a king's chapel and it is a king's court. He didn't want him out there where people could hear him. A couple of preacher friends of mine went down to Pennsylvania, then they went down to Washington, D.C., and they were going to do some street preaching in Washington, D.C., and somebody advised them to get a permit. And I knew it was against his thinking to do that, but for some reason somebody decided, okay, we'll go get a permit, and then they was able to preach. But their permit allowed them to preach in an alley where nobody was there. So one of the young preachers said, forget this, man. Let's go someplace where people can hear us. So they went right over to, not the Capitol building, but one of them buildings. I forgot which one. And they were standing on the sidewalk holding scripture signs and preaching. And one of them stood up on one step, just one step up, because he could hold his sign higher. And here comes a black federal agent, comes down, walks to him. He says, get off the sidewalk, or get off the steps. He said, what for? He said, you're protesting. You can't protest on these steps. You gotta get on the sidewalk. He said, I ain't protesting. I'm holding a Bible verse. He said, I'm telling you to get on them steps, down on the sidewalk. He said, what for? What law am I breaking? He said, you're protesting. He said, I'm not protesting. I'm holding a Bible verse sign. And then one preacher walked up to the black guy. He looked at him. He said, hey, feller, don't tell me to get the back of the bus. Oh, that was good. The guy walked back in the building. They stayed on the steps. He got him. He put it right where he let him know. See, when you ask these bureaucrats permission to do something that God tells you to go ahead and do, they'll put you in a place where nobody could hear you. That's what they're trying to do to Amos here. Verse 14, then Amos answered and said to Amaziah, I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was a herdman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit. He said, I'm a nobody. I wasn't taught these things. He said, the Lord took me up as I followed the flock. He said, I'd rather be out there with the sheep anyway. I get much better cooperation out of them. And the Lord said unto me, go prophesy unto my people Israel. Now therefore hear thou the word of the Lord. Thou sayest, prophesy not against Israel, and drop not thy word against the house of Isaac. Therefore, thus saith the Lord. Boy, look at this kind, sweet comment that he's going to make. Thy wife shall be an harlot in the city, and thy sons and thy daughters shall fall by the sword, and thy land shall be divided by line, and thou shalt die in a polluted land, and Israel shall surely go into captivity forth of his land. Boy, wasn't that a nice, sweet comment he gave them? That's them old prophets. And that's what the Lord led them do. Okay, Jeremiah 38, verse 3, read that, verse 4. Read that. Verse 5, then Zedekiah the king said, behold, he is in your hand, for the king is not he that can do anything against you. Then they took Jeremiah and cast him into the dungeon. So here he goes again, back down. And these aren't like American jails. Now I've heard from several guys down in Jasper County, this is the worst jail I've been in. I usually ask them, how many have you been in? And they'll list them out. But this is dungeon, boy. This is bad. Where they're sticking him. In the dungeon, it says, verse 6, that was in the court of the prison, and they let down Jeremiah with cords. That's how bad it is. No steps, no nothing. They had to drop him down by rope. And in the dungeon, there was no water but mire. It's a clay. So Jeremiah sunk in the mire. That's a dungeon. Now when Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs which was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon, the king then sitting in the gate of Benjamin, Ebed-Melech went forth out of the king's house and spake to the king, saying, now if you can figure out his race, you can kind of get the twang of his words. My lord the king. Okay, and notice that when the Lord's going to help somebody out, he'll get somebody there. My lord the king, this is a man have done no evil in all day that have done to Jeremiah the prophet. And he had the king's respect. Whom they cast into the dungeon, and he is like to die. Now, doesn't that sound like a southern phrase? He is like to die, man. He him down there, and he'd like to die. It's a southern expression. You'll find something like this in Exodus. It's kind of funny. Where it says the Egyptians said, we be all dead men. It says that right there in Exodus. See, that's just the way people talk. This is where they are. You probably all heard this one. The black preacher and the white preacher is talking about trying to figure out what color God was. So they go out in the wilderness. They yelled up, God, what color are you? And God said, I am that I am. And the black guy, and they walked away, and the black guy shaking and said, yeah, you's right. You's right. He's a white boy. So if he's black, he'd have said, I is that I is. Yeah, that's usually our. I had a black guy in jail tell me one time, I was trying to tell him about Jesus Christ, and he said, oh, I suppose you think he's white. And I said, I suppose you think he's black. I can throw the same attitude. He said, well, he had hair like, white like wool. I said, it wasn't woolly hair. I said, besides, he's brown. He ain't white, he ain't black, he's brown. He's a Jew. He's a Jew. Okay, let's see. Here's Ebed. He says he's like to die for hunger in the place where he is. See how he's talking? He writes it right. He's like to die for hunger in the place where he is, for there is no more bread in the city. Then the king commanded Ebed, Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, take from hence 30 men with thee. Take up Jeremiah the prophet out of the dungeon before he die. Isn't that amazing? 30 men. So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went into the house of the king under the treasury and took thence old cast clots and old rotten rags and let them down by cords into the dungeon of Jeremiah. And Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian said unto Jeremiah, put now these old cast clots and rotten rags under thine armholes, under the cords. And Jeremiah did so. So they drew Jeremiah with cords and took him up out of the dungeon. And Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. Okay, now where does Ebed get that blessing? I think it's at the end of 39. Yeah, there we go. 39:16. Thank you. Now, because of this service that Ebed did for Jeremiah, the Lord gives him a tremendous blessing. Jeremiah 39:15. And in Matthew's account, he wrote in there, I think it's 10, the last two verses, that if you give a prophet like a drink or something like that, then you'll get a prophet's reward. So what you're doing is you're being a blessing to somebody. And Ebed, in his heart, he knew Jeremiah was right. He knew he was right. He knew the king was wrong. He knew the princes were wrong. And you know, there are a lot of, there are some people that are in the system that are like that. They know what's going on isn't right. You know, there are several nurses in America that have switched from pro-choice to pro-life. Pro-choice. Actually, I should say pro-death to pro-life, to do it the right way. Because they have actually witnessed out-and-out murder in the abortion mill. Some of them have actually heard babies come out screaming, quickly throwing them in buckets to drown. And they have witnessed the failed saline poisoning of the babies when they come out burned and scarred. And some of them have witnessed the baby screaming in a little bonnet, in their little bassinet there. But they don't treat the baby, because it's a failed procedure of the saline poisoning. So what do? Just wait till the baby suffers and dies. There are some websites that you get on that show pictures of what goes on in abortions. And it's quite shocking. It's quite shocking what they do. One of the procedures is they take a knife, cut the baby apart inside mama's womb, and then she gives birth to all these pieces, and then they make sure it's right. If Americans
if they would show these pictures and what actually takes place, a lot of people would think differently. But because it's hidden, people just
out of sight, out of mind.
And there have, in fact, the woman of Roe v. Wade, the Mrs. Roe, Jane Roe, whatever she was, has started a case to try to overturn Roe v. Wade down in Texas of, what, 30-some years later? I'm not sure. Yeah, 30 years later. She started a case. It was 30-year anniversary. She started a case where she wants to try to overthrow that. Was pro-abortion, now is pro-life or anti-abortion.
Okay, so here's the great blessing that Ebed. And to me, if you just live clean and live sincere and live honest, people who have a conscience that's still alive, they see that. They see that, and they try to help you out. Ebed Melech was one of those guys. Verse 14, verse 15. Now of Jeremiah 39. Now the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, "Go and speak to Ebed Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Behold, I will bring my words upon this city for evil, and not for good. And they shall be accomplished in that day before thee. But I will deliver thee in that day, saith the Lord, and thou shalt not be given into the hand of the men of whom thou art afraid." He's scared to death. He's scared to death. "For I will surely deliver thee, and thou shalt not fall by the sword, but thy life shall be for a prey unto thee, because thou hast put thy trust in me, saith the Lord." And at that point he said, "Man, I was so glad I helped that Jeremiah out. I'm so glad I listened to him." And that's what the Lord will do. Okay, let's see. That's 38, 12, 13, 14. Okay, back in 14 to where we're at. Then Zedekiah the king sent and took Jeremiah the prophet on him into the third entry that is in the house of the Lord. And the king said unto Jeremiah, "I will ask thee a thing, hide nothing from me." Well, he hasn't hid anything from me before, boss. Then Jeremiah said unto Zedekiah, "If I declared unto thee, wilt thou not surely put me to death? Or if I give thee counsel, wilt thou not hearken unto me?" Jeremiah has been at it long enough, now he's setting them up. And if you kind of get at this long enough, you ever have somebody ask you your opinion, or if they ask you what you thought was right, and then you told them what you believed was right, and they got mad at you? Ever had that happen? Several times. So, several years ago, my brother-in-law in Pennsylvania asked me a couple Bible questions. And it was about the King James issue. And I could see what was going to happen here. I said, "Oh boy." And I said, "Why are you asking me these questions?" He said, "Because I want to know the answer. I want to know the truth." I said, "Are you serious?" He probably thought, "Man, what are you asking me for?" And I said, "Are you serious about this?" He said, "Yeah, I'm serious." I said, "Okay, here we go." And I started laying it out. And he has jumped on that old King James Bible and has been on it for about 8 to 9 years now. And his family think I've done ruined him. It wasn't me, it was the book. He's been in the book. And he convinced a cousin who has already graduated from 3 years of school down at PBI. And so he's done ruined. And he was just in court today. And so something that he has to go through. And it's interesting, in the court proceedings, they said Ruckman's a cult. They're talking about this in court. Ruckman's a cultist and all this stuff. And just one thing after another. It's just amazing. Okay, so Jeremiah is asking them. And there are times I do believe you should ask somebody these questions. If they ask you a question, you look at them and say, are you really looking for the answer? Or are you just looking, you know, for somebody just to give you some opinion? And what you're doing is you're kind of setting them up where, okay, now, if you ask me what I believe is the truth, here's the answer. Now, you're going to have to do something with it now. It's not a, I'm just going to, you know, please you with curiosity. You have to do something. God does not reveal truth for curiosity's sake. He reveals truth so that we accept it or reject it. Now, if we accept it, then more light is given. If we reject it, then our pilot light's blown out. Until the next time. And the next time he shows us something, it's going to be the same thing he just got done showing us. This is a pattern how the Lord follows. Verse 16. So Zedekiah the king swears secretly unto Jeremiah, saying, notice secretly. They always got to do these things behind closed doors. Back in the late 70s, was it late 70s, Dad, that we went to Congress, walked the halls of Congress with the farm program? There were several bureaucrats that said behind closed doors, secretly to us, this program will work, and they were supportive of it. But boy, when they get public, they sure do a switch. But secretly, they're masters at these things. Now, whether they believe it or not, who really knows, but they said they did, privately. But publicly, that's a whole different ballgame. And that's the way these guys are. Okay, when they get publicly, they got to lick their fingers, stick it in the air, and see which way the wind's blowing. Okay, so Zedekiah swears secretly unto Jeremiah, saying, as the Lord liveth. Now, the Lord heard that oath. Now, when he's saying that oath, that is an oath. And that will come true when it's coming from a king. As the Lord liveth, that made us this soul, I will not put thee to death, neither will I give thee into the hand of these men that seek thy life. And there's an oath, there's a promise. Okay, that was good enough for Jeremiah. Then said Jeremiah to Zedekiah, okay, thus saith the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, if thou wilt assuredly go forth unto the king of Babylon's princes, then thy soul shall live. And this city shall not be burned with fire, and thou shalt live and thine house. But if thou wilt not go forth to the king of Babylon's princes, then shall this city be given into the hand of the Chaldeans, and they shall burn it with fire, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand. Now that's pretty cut and dry, isn't it? Then, and Zedekiah the king said unto Jeremiah, I'm afraid of the Jews. They're all fallen to the Chaldeans, lest they deliver me into their hand, and they mock. Oh, they're going to mock me. They're going to make fun of me. You poor little sissy. Can't stand ridicule. They're going to mock me. Jeremiah probably thinking, you deserve it, you little twerp. Jeremiah said, they shall not deliver thee. Obey. Now he's begging him. Obey, I beseech thee. Obey the voice of the Lord, which I speak unto thee. So it shall be well with thee, unto thee, and thy soul shall live. But if thou refuse to go forth, this is the word that the Lord hath showed me. And behold, all the women that are left in the king of the Judah's house shall be brought forth to the king of Babylon's princes. And those women shall say, thy friends have set thee on and have prevailed against us, against thee. Thy feet are sunk in the mire, and they are turned away back. So they shall bring out all thy wives and thy children to the Chaldeans, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand, but shall be taken by the hand of the king of Babylon, and thou shalt cause this city to be burned with fire. Then said Zedekiah unto Jeremiah, let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die. Too late, pal. You already said it.
Verse 16 is an oath. That is the oath that God's going to hold him to. Verse 24, he doesn't want this to get out. He's afraid. What would they say if I'm talking to Jeremiah? He's a radical fanatic. So he puts a P.S. on his oath, but it's too late. That don't work. God don't look at it that way. God accepts the oath of 16. 24, that don't work. Let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die. But if the princes hear that I have talked with thee, and they come unto thee and say unto thee, declare unto us now what thou hast said unto the king. Hide it not from us, and we will not put thee to death. Also what the king said unto thee. Then thou shalt say unto them, I presented my supplication before the king that he would not cause me to return to Jonathan's house to die there. So he's asking Jeremiah to lie. He said, Jeremiah, here's what I want you to tell him to do. Then came all the prince unto Jeremiah and asked him, and he told them according to all these words that the king had commanded. So he did what the king said. So they left off speaking with him, for the matter was not perceived. So Jeremiah abode in the court of the prison, and on the day that Jerusalem was taken, he was there when Jerusalem was taken. Now did Jeremiah do right, verse 27? Well, it was an order from the king, and the king's going to be the one that answers for that. When you're under the authority of somebody and the one over authority orders you to do something, you obey their order, they are the one that's going to answer for it. If parent orders child to do something, child obeys parent, the act is wrong, mom and dad are going to be the one that answer for it at the judgment seat. Child obeyed parent. And that's kind of the thinking on that. Verse chapter 38. Okay, that's the end of 38. We'll stop there. Do you have any questions or comments that we covered? Yes, sir?
Where it talks about thou shalt be afraid.
Could
you define that phrase? I mean, wow.
Well, they've called the Chaldeans as lions. So they're the lions. Chaldeans are lions, and the people are the gazelles, and they're going to be.
Literally, like the word says.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.